Achieving a gorgeous grin from home isn't a total mystery with BiteClear aligners. Just don't be surprised if all of your sleuthing friends start asking, "What's your secret?" Begin by ordering your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95. BiteClear aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer flexible financing, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
The Pure Hoops podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media. The Pure Hoops podcast most definitely does reflect the views of our management. Here's three-time NBA champ BJ Armstrong and Eric Newman.
Pure Hoops Podcast, Eric Newman in New York, BJ Armstrong in LA. We are recording on Friday, March 27, 2020. Still an uncertain time, but BJ, we are here. We are making the most of it. How are you today, my friend?
Oh, man, I can't complain. And we're just hanging in there, Eric, one day at a time. But thanks for asking. The Armstrong House is... Where, you know, we're just doing and playing our part.
Glad to hear it. Glad to hear it. There's been a lot of 1991, 92, and 93 versions of you floating around on NBA TV during these hardwood classic games. So hopefully you're catching yourself on the big screen from time to time during these Bulls finals replays. But it's been a strange time for sure. New York is, as everybody knows, having a tough time right now. I'm thankfully healthy and safe and secure and aiming to keep it that way. But thankful we get to talk some hoops and get the pod out to the people. You know, BJ, as we continue to do this show together, we are we're landing some guests who bring a certain prestige to the table. And today's guest happens to be someone we've both had a positive relationship with for a long time. He may say differently, but please to welcome Bleacher Report senior writer, FS1 analyst, and host of Bucher and Friends podcast, the one, the only, Rick Bucher. How are you, my man?
I'm good. You know, the way you started that intro, I thought it was going to be... we've been able to land some very influential and high-profile guests, but every once in a while we got to go to the bottom of the barrel and we've got to make do with what we get. And so here we have Rick Bucher joining us. There you go.
We got to go back to the old paper Rolodex, the pre-digital.
Yeah, exactly. So
Good to have you on, my man.
Yeah, good to be with you guys. It's too bad that we can't, obviously, circumstances don't let us do it in person, but it's good to be. Going to be chopping it up with both of you.
Yeah, Rick and I go back a long, long way, and I mean a long. We go back a long time, and Rick, I was just as you were talking there. I was just remembering. Remember when I got traded to Golden State, and you took me out to play pool. I think in San Francisco, and we just chopped it up. Remember that night?
Yeah. Yeah, I remember that. I also remember, like, this is where. I think BJ and I first connected, and I won't say the name of the beat writer. You know where I'm going, right? So this particular beat writer was, as you know, some people in the media business, especially writers, aren't necessarily in the most ideal shape, and so this was one of my competitors, and we're sitting there and we're watching the Warriors dance team out there, and I want to say he was eating jelly beans as he said.
Oh God, stop it.
And he says, "Looks like she missed a few appointments with the stairmaster." And I looked at him and I was like, really? And so I shared that with BJ, and I think for the first time BJ thought, oh, so there's people in the media who look at the media like I look at the media. And I think we bonded over that, over the hypocrisy that sometimes occurs.
That was... I'm sorry. Oh, God. I guess you had to be there.
I can tell this story has had absolutely no staying power with BJ. So
yeah,
there's only one way to go from here, and that's straight down.
Yeah. Oh, Puke. I just had to say this. That was one of the funniest things. I couldn't believe it. That was one of the funniest things to me. And here we are, what, 20-something? I don't know. It's more than that, like 25 years later.
Has not lost its punch whatsoever. Yeah. I'm with you. And I wish, I only wish that we could give you guys a visual of who said it. Because then it would... That's what's making BJ laugh right now. He's got the full picture.
I'm gonna have to go to work on BJ offline here and at least get some initials.
And I could every time I would get interviewed, I would see him and I would just crack up. All right.
So
handful of jelly beans. So mouth full of jelly beans. Looks like she missed the Stairmaster appointment. Okay.
So, Buke, aside from you keeping the old sense of humor sharp, how are things going out there right now in the Bay during this uncertain time?
Yeah, it's funny. I was just having a conversation earlier with Colin Coward, actually, and he asked me the same question. And I've been obviously keeping up to tabs on like where this thing is on a global and national level. And I'm reading the news here or listening to the news here, but it dawned on me that I'm not like locally we're in shutdown mode. I live in a small town on the coast about 30 minutes from the San Francisco airport. And we've been following protocol and we've been pretty isolated. It doesn't mean that we can't get outside and we haven't been doing things, but it made me realize that I am not like, I'm not following the local statistics on where things are comparative to the rest of the country. I think in part because trying to stay on top of where the NBA is going and still doing my job. I've been focused on paying more attention to the big picture.
Yep.
And so, California in general and the Bay Area in particular have been very aggressive in putting things in place, restrictions in place. And so it appears that is working effectively. I don't know if where things are. I mean, obviously there's triage in New York right now. Things have just been extended to May 1st as far as shutdowns here or the current protocol being in place. And that's essentially all I know. But being someone who's either on the road or working at home, this hasn't been a huge shift from me as far as how I operate. It's been more like, okay, so what are the stories? What are the things that need to be told in this vacuum? Or how do you still provide and create content covering sports when there are no actual games being played?
And BJ, before you jump in, you know, Rick, that's a great point. I mean, from where you sit right now, how are you approaching that with this drastic change of we're leading up to the playoffs and then all of a sudden the season is put on a hard pause? How are you approaching coming up with that next story, doing that next conversation, that next pod, that next appearance, et cetera, et cetera?
Well, the first line, I think the first line is
there's two parts to that. Is one is sharing the experience of that I think all sports fans are experiencing, which is what do we do and what it's like to be operating without sports. And so there's the personal connection on that level. But then there's also looking at the NBA and sports trying to get back to business and the impact of this, which is unprecedented. Like, how do you what do you do? How does it impact the draft? How does it impact a preparation for the draft? How does it impact players who may, after a 2-month layoff, you know, if the NBA gets its wishes, we come back and we play. And fans who believe that, well, you know, I work out at home all the time and I'm fit. So, you know, why can't NBA players do that? And kind of letting people understand what goes into actually being an elite athlete and how much not having the normal facilities and access to all the things that players have, like how much of an impact that can have, how much that changes. And so looking across the board at how does this unexpected, unanticipated break with an open end of not knowing how long it's going to go, how does that impact the NBA and the business of the NBA if indeed it wants to come back? What are people in the NBA doing now with their time trying to keep the wheels moving? And so that's where I'm looking for stories.
Well, Rick, I think you hit it, you know, right on the head there. What are you hearing in terms of how would they bring it back? Like, do you have any sense now, time, what this format would look like? You have any kind of give us an idea of what you're hearing, as I know you're talking to people around the league just as much as I am, but what are you hearing out there?
Yeah, it's there seems to be surprisingly still a healthy amount of optimism that there is going to be a playoff, that the season is going to be resumed in some form this summer. The challenge is going to be knowing that it's going to be a couple months here, knowing that players have dispersed, that there's going to be the need for a runway and a healthy runway to get guys, first of all, let them know we're coming back. So start getting ready. This is the date that we're going to bring everybody back together. This is the date that we're going to start trying to play games. And I get the sense that there's certainly a number of people in the league who are looking at it as an opportunity to experiment with some things that they've been talking about anyway, such as a play-in type of format for teams going into the playoffs, where you take whether it's the 8th through 11th seeds in the respective conferences and have a mini bracket, or take 6 through 10 and that's how you determine who are going to be the two teams in the 6th, 7th and 8th spot, or take 7 through 10 and determine how those last two playoff spots are going to be determined. And so that's where this provides that opportunity. You don't necessarily finish the regular season, but you have some sort of quick play in, and then play games in June and July. And if that means backing up the season a little bit next year, then you get a look at what that potentially could look like. And so I know the power of the NBA and the wherewithal that it has, and I think the value that they see in coming back and providing people content. It would obviously be in a very unique set of circumstances, no fans, smaller venues, maybe practice facilities, but what it would do for the relationship with the broadcast partners and as I see it with fans, you know, fans are always looking at players as being coddled and pampered and don't always appreciate what goes into being an NBA player and staying an NBA player. And if these guys were, let's say they had to be quarantined. Let's say they had to all be isolated together and were willing to do that in order to play games again, it would be making a sacrifice in order to entertain fans that I believe would create a tremendous amount of goodwill. Now, I don't know if you can get it done. I don't know if everybody would be willing to do it. But if they were, I just see the NBA, you know, once again, taking a measure that shows their fans how much they love playing the game and what they're willing to do to put on a performance for fans. I think the goodwill gesture and the relationship with the broadcast partners, I think there's a monetary and a general goodwill opportunity that would be invaluable for the NBA if they were able to pull it off.
So, Rick, do you feel more likely than not if the league can resume with whatever the lead up is into a playoff? Do you think more likely than not we will have playoff games not in the typical fashion of an arena with fans, but something in a more intimate setting like a practice facility or a scaled down venue? Is that what you're saying?
Yeah. I don't think there's any way that we're going to have fans in the building. And I, just from a logistical standpoint, you want to have as few people involved in the, I mean, if you have to create a bubble, you want to figure out what's the minimum number you need to have inside the bubble to make this function. And if you're doing it in a big arena, it creates issues. So I think you pull out all stops. I think you like, and again, this is asking for a tremendous amount of trust and sacrifice on the part of everyone, players, etc. And would they be willing to do it? You know, you got to cross that bridge. But if they were, you know, whether it's bringing everybody together, you're talking about essentially in the playoffs, you're talking about 220 players. And could you bring them together? Could you do this in Las Vegas or some central location where you bring everybody together and you house them together? You know, you get a couple of hotels, you really kind of you tighten the circle. You're playing. I mean, I kind of see it like if you could do it, if you did it in Vegas and you had everybody, you know, staying in, you know, one or two hotels that was exclusively for the NBA, and you were using Cox Pavilion and Thomas and Mack, and you ran games in there. You know, I mean, you could do it on your timeline. You could run multiple games in the same building. I mean, and do it on a shorter timeline. Maybe you shorten the series, but I just feel as if the power of the NBA and the desire to make this happen, there are enough forces with enough influence that you could do it. If everybody says, I'm in, I'll make the sacrifice, that there's a way to do it and to do it without jeopardizing the health of the public beyond your NBA circle.
Well, Rick, being the athlete that you are, in all seriousness, my question to you would be the following.
Yeah.
All right, that sounds great. How long would it take for these athletes to get in the type of condition that's necessary to play in these games?
Well, that's what's really tricky, because I'm saying, like, you need at least a month. You need at least two and a half weeks for guys just to try to recapture some semblance of their base. And then a week and a half with, like, we can really get into it with team practice. And even then, I mean, the greatest risk here, as you know, BJ, is we're not going, if we got a 2 month, 2.5 month layoff here.
Right.
It's basically trying to start playoff basketball. It's as if you're playing playoff basketball at the start of the season.
Right.
And the playoffs and what's at stake is going to have guys playing at a level, at an intensity that you generally need to build up to. And so that is
that's my biggest concern, is that you're going to have some injury. There's no way around it.
Right.
You're going to have guys who are going to play at a level that they're physically not ready to play at because everything's at stake. And so that is the part that worries me the most about what the repercussions of this could be. And then it gets into a rub where, like, if you're a smart agent, player, GM, coach, you know, who has the pushback to say, hey, I know we want to do this. I know that people would love us doing this. This is putting our guys at risk in a way
yes.
that may not be the smartest thing to do. And that is indeed where the rub comes in. And I don't have an answer for you. I mean, honestly, personally, any guy who would say it's a bad bet, like that's not a good idea for this reason, I would not be one who would say, oh, hey, suck it up, Buttercup. I wouldn't be that guy, but there would be plenty of people who would. So when you go down this road, you're opening yourself up to that avenue where guys are going to get shamed into doing something that they know is probably a bad idea.
I mean, Buke, you and I mean, look, we're not in those meetings, but I would have to believe, Rick, that there has to be some owners who would take that perspective and say, maybe we're better off long-term just canceling the rest of the season, starting fresh in October, November. I have to believe that discussion has come up. Are you hearing anything, Rick, definitive or?
I have not, but I have not been, I haven't talked directly to any owners in the last couple of weeks. It's on my, I intend to, but I have not to this point, simply because we're a week or two in, and the stories that I've been focused on have been more on the GM player level of in the moment, like as of right now, what do you do? How do you deal with this sudden interruption? The owner conversation is bigger picture. But I will say, and you know this, BJ, I mean, there may be a couple, but I would dare say there's probably more that are looking at the bottom line and mm-hmm. saying, hey, we like, you know, the TV revenue, if we don't have any more games, what happens to the TV revenue? What happens, like all of these ancillary things? It's, I mean, it wouldn't be the first time that owners have jeopardized the health of their players. with an eye on the bottom line. And I dare say that this could be, I would, if they're conversations, there may be conversations, but I would think that the vast majority of owners are saying, hey, it's worth the risk.
Rick, you hit it on the head with, you know, a quote unquote act of goodwill. If we can get, you know, the playoffs in whatever fashion on television, get fans back engaged who are, I mean, we all see it, whether you're on Twitter or in conversations or watching, you know, debate shows or whatnot. Fans are starving for games and starving for that distraction. And, you know, thinking about players and teams taking a pause, then returning to action, and you framed it perfectly. It's like, the season ends and it's a 2 month plus break and then you're back into training camp. And there's obviously no situation that's presented itself like this in the past, but you think about teams whose DNA is written by what they experience and go through during that season and what they take into the playoffs and how they're vibing and how their bodies are feeling and the team chemistry, et cetera, et cetera. We won't have that this year, regardless
right.
if it's back in the beginning of June, at the end of July. And I just find that really interesting to think about. And I meant to text you the other day. I was going down one of my Celtics playoff rabbit holes, watching a finals game from 2008. And there your face popped up in the first row of the TD Garden during the Celtics-Lakers finals. So with with all this playoff talk, and I mean, it's hard to believe, and I don't want to make you guys feel any older than you are, but we're 40 years removed from the beginning of the Bird Magic era, which transformed the whole NBA and has given us so many incredible playoff memories. So it's my long way around of prompting you on what are some of your favorite playoff memories that you've covered in this industry? Because I saw your face. I saw your face. It's the game where Paul Pierce goes down. And, you know, we had Paul on our Showtime All the Smoke show with Stack and Barnes, and they were in tears about the wheelchair incident. And you're sitting right there. So I'm saying to myself, how many great games has Buke been at in the playoffs? And it's something we wrote down for today.
Yeah, so I was thinking, I'm trying to think if it was Michelle Tafoya or Doris Burke that I was doing sideline for ESPN Radio. And one of those two, I'm trying to remember who it was. I want to say it was Doris. Was she? Could you tell? Could you see who was sitting next to me, courtside?
If I go back to it, yeah, I know Michelle. And it, Michelle covered that series because she does the interview with KG at the end of Game 6.
Well, so then that's who it was. Then that's who I ran. So when that whole thing happened, like we went. Our job is to get back to the locker room and find out like what's going on and literally to follow the wheelchair back to the locker room. and then, you know, the next thing you know is he comes sprinting out of the locker room and you're like, okay, what the hell? and look, I thought it was a great, first of all, I thought it was a great, you know, rallying move and a classic Paul Pierce. It was the ultimate flop is what it was. It was the greatest flop in NBA history, without question, because biggest stage, most prolonged, most dramatic. The only thing that would have been better is if they had wheeled him off on a gurney with an IV or something attached to him, and he had gone into the locker room and then come sprinting out. So, but I don't know that that's one of my favorite memories. It was like, oh God, really? This is where we've taken this thing. It was a little much. I don't know. There are, man, Sean Elliott.
What was your first finals?
My first finals actually was the 93, and maybe still to this day, maybe just because it was, you know, you always remember your first. But the 93 finals between Barkley and Jordan, where triple overtime in old Chicago Stadium, and you know Charles with his God wanted us to win this game, and Jordan, I like under the veil of the gambling questions, and so he wasn't talking to the media, and Charles was like the Pied Piper and was just regaling the media, and those two guys battling, and the difference between them as superstars and the difference between their the respective franchises. I mean, you couldn't have a bigger difference between whether it was Westfall and Phil Jackson or just like the whole dynamic, the Chicago versus Phoenix. It was just such a, for a writer in particular, it was such a battle of opposites and extremes. And it was also the first time where watching Jordan, and I'm sure BJ remembers this, like Michael decided, okay, you know what, I'm going to take Dan Majerle out of the game, and he's not. I'm going to focus on defensively. I'm going to do my usual offensive thing. But defensively, Dan Majerle is not. I'm going to completely remove him from the equation, and I remember watching and. And he, like, Marley, I think, got, like, maybe two shots, and they were, like, forced shots in the first half. He was lucky to touch the ball. And it was the first time where I saw a superstar. This is the distinction. Like, Magic and Bird would figure out, how can I influence the game with my greatness? Where is the opening for me in this matchup to influence the game in the biggest way possible? And with Jordan, it was, he would just decide, this is how I'm going to influence this particular game. Not how, what, you know, what's the way that I can. I'm just going to unilaterally decide, this is how I'm going to choke the life out of the opposition. And in this case, it was, you know what? I think for today, I'm just going to make life miserable for Dan Marley. That's how I've decided that I am going to influence this game. And then he did it. And it was just that was where the greatness of Jordan was impressed upon me. And the evolution from Magic and Bird to Michael. And I learned all of that in that 93 finals. Along with seeing, you know, a young chipper BJ Armstrong,
chipper
for the first time, chipper, and with a very cynical approach to the media, that became very clear right from the very beginning.
Like, he's carried that forward very successfully.
Oh yeah, hey, Rick, you live in the Bay Area, and you've covered, you've watched the teams out there in Golden State. And yeah. Golden State has, when I played out there, you know, you begin to realize the history, right? You know, you had the Rick Barry era. You had the Run TMC era. Then you had the Baron Davis, you know,
era.
You know, we believe. Now you having, you know, the Steph Curry era.
Yeah.
Out of all of those eras of just moments of time in the Bay Area, you know, clearly we know what this team has done, this current run that they've gone on. Which one would you call the funnest era to cover?
Oh, there's no question. It was We Believe. No question about it, because that was a team that was not very good. At the beginning of the season. And as a result of the malice in the palace, Chris Mullin was able to do a deal with Donnie Walsh, where they had to change up. And you brought Steven Jackson and Al Harrington into a team with Jason Richardson and Baron Davis. And it was just a collection of characters who, you know, as short of a timeline as they were on, they perfectly fit the Oakland motif of basketball. They were very much a street basketball team. And it was a perfect team for Nelly to mess with. Because they were, I mean, Nelly in his way, I mean, you can look at him now. He looks like the Don of Maui, right? Like the all black and the gold chain and the ponytail. I mean, he looks like, what's his name? John Travolta in Pulp Fiction. It looks like he watched that movie one too many times and goes, I want to be that guy.
Vincent Vega.
Like, you know, they needed this incredible run to make the playoffs, and then they go up against Dallas that had kicked Nelly to the curb, and he goes up against Avery Johnson, who came in for Tim Hardaway when Tim Hardaway blew his knee and was part of the team with C. Webb that made the playoffs. But, like, I mean, there was just so many storylines intertwined. And then they, you know, Dirk is the league MVP. And, like, I just knew, oh, man, these guys, like, Steven Jackson couldn't wait to guard Dirk Nowitzki. He knew he was going to make life miserable. And Nelly knew that Steven Jackson was going to make life miserable. And you just watched all that play off and play out. And then, you know, Baron Davis, the dunk on Andre Kirilenko. And I mean, and I think more than anything else was the passion of the Warriors fans. That's really where Oracle yep. got its reputation.
Yes, yes,
and,
yes.
And so I just – it was a moment in time. It was, I mean, we're talking about a half a season.
That yeah, Rick, the trade happened in January, right? That trade yeah. happened in January yeah. of that season?
Happened in January. They made the playoffs like the last day or two of the season.
Yeah.
And then it was just an incredible – incredible run. And so to have that happen and to see the Bay Area on fire, not to say that it wasn't fun, like this last run, but it like that really captured the imagination of right. the Bay Area. And that was true. And as the Warriors' success went on, you got a lot of Bay Area fans who were casual fans. And right. and so it didn't feel as genuine as the We Believe was really felt like an inside job. And you had a tight circle of people that had suffered and suffered and suffered. And then suddenly you just lit the place on fire, and the people that had been there all along, you know, it wasn't the opportunity for the venture capitalists to come in and squeeze out the people that had been there all those years and buy courtside seats and be on their phones doing deals and all that stuff. Like what we have now, it's
right.
It's just permanently changed. That was the heart of Oracle and the fans and the team and the gritty personality. Like all that is gone, and that's what I will remember as the heart of what the Warriors were.
Rick, before I cut you off before we jump to the Bulls and the Suns, you started to say something about, I believe, Sean Elliott's shot. Are you talking about the 99 Spurs yeah. and their run to their first championship?
Yeah, just being there and his, like, hitting the shot with his heels over the out-of-bounds line that turned that series, and then knowing that, you know, he was dealing with a kidney issue that he would ultimately need to have his kidney replaced. Or to get a new kidney from his brother. That was one of those moments that, you know, being there, and again, at a time where I was courtside and seeing that and obviously I was there when Jordan hit the last shot in Utah and over Brian Russell and all of the drama around that. I mean, there are a lot of amazing and fantastic moments in NBA playoff history that I was fortunate enough to be a witness of firsthand. But it's those little glimpses. It's actually, I could go back to the lockout year when the Spurs beat the Knicks and I didn't realize how lucky I was, but we were in New York and it was the first time I witnessed like Pop's restaurant acumen and his ability. Like they have the chef's table, right? Where you get a table in the actual kitchen and the chef just brings things to you for you to taste or to dine on. And I was lucky enough that Pop during that series had set that up for the Spurs team in a kitchen in a restaurant in New York, and I got invited to be part of that and sit at the table and to experience that whole thing. Obviously, just, you know, no notebook, no tape recorder, no camera, and honestly, in today's world, like if one of my editors or producers knew that I'd been in a situation like that and didn't record it, didn't get content from it, I'd probably be fired.
Gotta have
but at
content.
That time, it content. Was, yeah, exactly. You got to exploit every opportunity. And that was at a time where you were still allowed to build relationships and experience things like that and allow them to be organic. Because you, this is the thing that I think is missed sometimes, is that there's so much that is learned and there's so much trust that is gained in being there as an observer and as a person, as a participant in the experience, as opposed to somebody who's trying to exploit every last second and minute. And I get the drive and the need to produce content today and the competition, but I miss those days where you could just, if you were lucky enough to get inside the circle, that you could just be there to observe and experience it and cultivate the relationships that come from it, and that they would, the trust that these would pay off down the line, that you would then get opportunities to tell stories and do things that that somebody else didn't or couldn't do. But those in between moments are also the things that I cherish the most from my experience in covering the NBA, as I've had the opportunity to do so.
What restaurant was it?
I could not tell you. I wish I could tell you. I have the dude.
What type of cuisine?
I was an Italian. It was an Italian, place. Yeah.
No, I mean, you listen, from our time working together and knowing how much time and how important the relationships you had spent years building, how much they meant, but the amount of time and trust that went into them, and the climate that we've all been in now the last, 4 or 5 years,
yeah,
where I don't think people understand what it takes to build those relationships, to get those trusts, to get behind those closed doors, to have those conversations. I don't think people really understand, and they just want the quick turn stuff over and over again. And yeah, that's not what you've made your name on. You've adapted to this new world, clearly, but that's not how you rose through the industry.
Well, and it's funny because I, in wanting to see my kids grow up, I sort of stepped away from being intensely involved in the NBA, and I did a radio show in one form or another for about 7 years, and I kept tabs on the NBA and I tried to maintain my relationships, but unless you're really out there and you're seeing people in person and you're going out to dinner and you're talking on a regular basis, you need to work at maintaining those relationships. And I took a little bit of a hiatus that I'm now in the process of rebuilding a lot of that. And what's interesting is to have that 7 year break and then come back to it and see how dramatic it has changed. And to your point, like, it's really, really hard to do anything where you're like, hey, look, I just need to go see these people. I need to go see this situation. Some of it's just the dynamics of the financial picture for media outlets, in that, I every year for years upon years, I would go to the Pete Newell Big Man Camp, and I would be there for a week on Oahu, and I might write one story for ESPN, the magazine, one 500 word story over that, the course of that week. But I would, the number of coaches and players that I would cultivate relationships with, it was such a rich situation. Nobody's sending you anywhere in this day and age for a week on the road to do a 500 word story. To do one 500 word story. And so the opportunity is, I get it. The dynamics make it difficult to invest in something unless you can show the rate of return, the ROI, the return on investment. But I still believe that
doing that whenever you can is vital. And that's something that I got away from. And now I'm taking extra measures to get back to like any opportunity. I do TV for FS1. So anytime I'm down there, I'm going to games, or I'm trying to grab a lunch or a dinner with somebody in the league to try to, you know, recultivate those relationships in the best way I can on the terms that I did before. But it's taking that 7 years and going away and coming back is like, wow, this really is different. But it's different. I'm not going to say it's good or bad. It's just different.
Good stuff, my man. BJ, anything else from you?
I got nothing. That's my guy. This is my guy. This is my guy, Buke, man. He's all over the place. He's a social media phenom, television. This guy's everywhere. He's breaking stories. He's everywhere.
Dude, you know? I'm like all of us. I'm just trying to figure out how this damn thing works, man. And I, you know, bottom line, I love the NBA. I love telling people stories. I love getting to know the people behind the uniform or the clipboard or the, you know, the big moment that everybody sees. Cause I still think it comes down to we're all human beings. And if you can show how human the person is that did that extraordinary thing that you just, that blew your mind, then it only doubles your appreciation for what they actually accomplished.
Great closer right there. The one and only, our friend and yours, Rick Buecher.
And we believe.
We believe.
And we believe. Good to be with you guys.
You too, buddy.
All right.
Okay, stay safe. Be well.
All right, guys. All right, later. Thanks.
So enlightening stuff, BJ, as always, from our old friend Rick Buecher. Definitely somebody I miss working with, but always love catching up with. And, you know, one thing of the many insightful things he said, one that's really interesting to me is the thought of bringing all the playoff teams and participants to one place where they're safe, they're quarantined, and they're playing through the playoffs all in one city at the same time. What's running through your head as he's saying that? Are you envisioning something like that could work?
Well, I'm envisioning that as an agent and all of the problems that would present for travel and all of the other things. I think in theory, it sounds good. It sounds like a potential solution, but getting the players and the families and all of the things, there's always a human dynamic here that I've maintained as an ex-player, as an executive, now as an agent, that, you know what, it's, you're asking these players to, I know playing is very valuable. It's something they really cherish and they really want to do and they hold in the highest regard. But at the same time, you know, sometimes, as they say, life gets in the way. And asking these players to be in a contained space for time, for a significant amount of time, I think would be very difficult to do just from the human perspective. Now, I'm not saying it's not possible, but I would imagine in dealing with that and all of the issues that comes with dealing with human beings, that would be very difficult to do, especially in Vegas.
Especially.
I mean, if you're in Vegas for more than 2 days, I mean, you're probably going to have problems.
Remind me to tell you the story of the year I went there for Summer League for a week.
Yeah, Summer League is always tough. You know,
on the next episode of BJ and Eric going to Vegas. Good stuff today, my friend. Hopefully there is a Summer League for us. Hopefully there is
an
NBA postseason for us to look at and celebrate down the road. Until then, we'll continue to have conversations, embracing and celebrating playoffs and postseasons past. But I'm glad we're still moving the show forward week to week during these uncertain times. And definitely a refreshing conversation today for sure. So as always, special thanks to you, my man, and the rest of the Pure Hoops media team, producer Mike Lieber, Bruce Bernstein, editor Benjamin Wolfen. Be sure to check out the Mike Wise Show with Mike Wise, dropping on Monday. Full Court Press with Fanta and Adams coming back at you next week. Catch and Shoot 2.0 with Otto Strong and Aaron Berlin. Buckets, Boards, and Blocks with the one and only Monica McNutt. And, of course, the Pure Hoops Podcast with BJ Armstrong, myself, and our new roster of guests. So we'll see who comes in next week for us. But without a doubt, be looking to add some unique voices to the show and continue to talk about the game, the league, and getting through this tough time together. Have a great weekend, everybody. Stay safe, stay healthy, stay pure.
The Pure Hoops Podcast is a presentation of Pure Hoops Media.
Let's jump into Peppa's world of play. Look for spring flowers, hunt for muddy puddles, and bravely explore exciting places with Peppa play sets. Peppa Pig. Inspiring kid confidence.